Hello and welcome to a special edition of the In the Money Players podcast. This is our show for Wood Memorial Day. Very excited to be looking at the pick six sequence on this day. Peter Thomas Fornital back with you from Blue Door Smokehouse in Lexington, Kentucky. Getting very excited for their reopening. Got a master class in brisket making the last couple of days from the pit master, the owner here, Jeff Newman. Really, really enjoyable stuff. But now we're getting back to the important business of horse racing. And on this show, we're looking at horse racing in New York. And we bring in two men that I always love to talk to before betting racing in New York. We'll start with the usual co-host on the In the Money media programs. You've been seeing him a lot on our YouTube channel doing Triple Crown prep stuff. He is many things, including a clothing designer, a TV personality. Most of all, he's just my pain in the ass business partner. He's Jonathan Kinchin. What's up, JK?
Well, I think if there was an Eclipse Award for pain in the ass business partners, you might be a back-to-back champion.
Fair enough. We'll squabble off air. We have another guest we have to bring in here, a man who is best described, I think, as a legendary horse player. And again, somebody who in racing in general, particularly when it comes to the nuances of the New York circuit and the pick six in general, you always want to hear what he has to say. He's Stephen Crist. Steve, how are you?
Hey, Pete. Doing good. Big weekend coming up.
You guys both unaffected by the earthquake I'm hearing about that just happened in New York. We didn't feel anything here in Lexington, Kentucky, but everything okay? All the books stayed on the shelves there, Steve, on Long Island?
Yeah, it was really just the windows rattled, but not a usual Friday.
Yeah,
okay, I mean, what was it like up in Saratoga?
I mean, I kind of wish I could go back and like feel it again. I thought it was. I made a joke to my wife. I think Rigatoni trying to break out of the house. He's a 22-pound French bulldog. But it sounded pretty. It was pretty dramatic for about a second and a half. But it just felt like a garbage truck drove by.
Nothing broken, nothing thrown, it sounds like, which is very good. Hopefully, we will be the ones throwing around after we hit this pick six on Saturday at the Big A. Very excited as the spring meet is now officially underway. We're going to kick things off in this sequence with, I think we start off with some stakes action, don't we? We start off with a grade three, in fact, the grade three Distaff Stakes, fillies and mares going 7 furlongs on the dirt, a six pack. Shout out to Jason Blewett for one of his old sayings, turning up here in a race that I was very focused on the pace and what that might be and had some questions about that. We'll start our questions with Steve. I'll ask him specifically, what do you think of the pace scenario in this race and who is going to benefit most from it?
Well, I think there should be some pretty decent pace in here with Royal Poppy and Hot Fudge. Both have, decent early speed. I think this is a pretty nice field for a grade three in April. And I'm going to have to use all three of the favorites, that being Ain't Broke, Hot Fudge, and Fingal's Cave. I think Hot Fudge, who is always over bet but frequently wins, is vulnerable in this spot. This is not a filly that I would ever lean on. Because I think Ain't Broke is just as good. And I think Fingal's Cave, we still haven't seen the best of and still has some ceiling left. So I'm going to use all three of them in this race. I know, very courageous stand, take the three favorites and use them all. But I think it's splitting hairs among the three of them.
When you take a holistic approach, people need to understand to the pick six, and somebody might say, well, why, why play the bet if you're going to use the three favorites in the first race? But if you're constructing your tickets correctly and you have opinions elsewhere, you can still find equity even with a, no offense, fairly basic opinion in the opening leg. Is that a correct description of your approach, Steve?
It absolutely is, and I think, you can use all three of them, get through the race, and you haven't lost any equity in here. People will waste money on other horses in here, and, this is a race you want to get through and not get knocked out. I can't see any of the other three fillies winning the race.
When I asked about the pace, it was because I was trying to conjure a scenario where there was enough pace for Fingles Cave, who I don't think is quite fast enough to make the lead in here, but enough pace to soften up the four, Hot Fudge, to get her in the mix, but maybe not quite enough pace to get Ain't Broke, who I think will be looking at pace figures and coming out of the mile race a little bit further back off the pace involved. So I was going to try to make a case for pressing Fingles Cave and going to save with Hot Fudge, perhaps foolishly taking a stand against Ain't Broke, who I think will be the best closer, but I was hoping might just run out of room. So I was going to call it 5-4. JK, how do you see this?
Excuse me. Yeah, I see the same way that Steve does. I really don't have any reason to try to get cute in here because I have some cuter opinions later. I think when you talk about it holistically, that, you know, another way to look at it is that, you know, the pick six, the first and foremost, most important part about playing the pick six is the only way you can win is if you hit it. So this idea of trying to get cute in every single leg is ridiculous to me. And I know a lot of the internet basement livers, they like to do that. I want to survive this race because I do not have a strong opinion. And sure, if I don't want to play the pick six, I can just play the pick five. But I feel the same way. I mean, I've always had a thing for Fingles Cave. And I think Dave Donk is an outstanding, outstanding horseman who does everything the right way and just does it on a very small scale. So sometimes he'll have some, you know, for the meet, he's 5% because he takes his time. He puts horses where they need to be and things of that nature. So, but I think when he's got a good one, he'll keep it good. I'm going to use 2, 4, and 5, all as A's, and I'll get cute a little bit later.
Steve certainly can back up that opinion, I think, about Dave Donk's skill.
He's our trainer, and we love him. And as Jonathan said, he's just a great horseman, and he keeps his horses happy, figures out where they belong, and he's done very, very well by us. We've done well by him.
Let's move on to race number 7. We've got an allowance race going a mile on the dirt and a field of 11 heading to post in this one. I'll go first in this spot. Why not? I thought there was enough pace in here to set it up for runners from off the pace and was mostly interested in the two I thought would be the best closers. I'll start with the one I think might be positioned a little ahead of the other. I thought Mystical Curtain was a bit interesting. The 9 runner did show speed off the bench, but you'll see that happen sometimes with horses getting a bit fresh. I think the way this race pans out, I'm hoping he can settle off. I know he's not exactly the winningest, most kind with the 2 for 19 lifetime with the 6 seconds, but second off the bench with the right kind of scenario. I thought Mystical Curlin was a little bit interesting in here, and I certainly wasn't going to get beat by Ben Doug, a runner who, if they go a little bit too fast, if a runner like Mystical Curtain joins the party early, I thought might have the late punch to be heard from in this spot. Second North American start coming back off that middling type layoff, but I thought had the talent to potentially get the job done. I called it 9-7 in race number 7. Steve, what do you think?
I'm more of a 7-6-9 in this race. I thought the 6 Best Spoochie ran tremendously last time, coming off a 9-month layoff, off winning his debut. He did all the dirty work in the race, appeared to have it put away, and you know, then got run down at the very end of the race. I think with any kind of routine improvement off that race, he's very, very dangerous here. Ben Doug obviously is a grade one placed, you know, horse who's eligible for a one other than, he may just be better than all these horses. But I thought the two of them, with Mystical Curlin as my sort of third horse, I was going to try to get through the race without getting any cuter than that.
It's a strong case for Vespucci, especially when you consider didn't break with alacrity last time, and that extra efforts to get involved might have told on him. It might not have been a question of the distance being too far. You know, you don't always love to see up by 3 then beaten a nose, but when you factor in the layoff, you factor in the break. I probably was underrating Vespucci, and we'll throw that one in at least on a backup line. JK, how about you? We're centering around the same horses here. Are you with us, or do you want to bring somebody else into the mix?
Yeah, I'm going to use 6, 7, 9 as A's, and then the 5, Reddington, I'm going to also use as an A. I love the pace figures last time. It wasn't a slop, and it was for Rob Atteris, but, you know, we're not too far removed from that performance, where at a big price, I think you could kind of get a little bit cute. I thought the horse ran extremely well that day, and the horse has some back numbers, has some pace. You get Kendrick Carmouche, who knows the horse. So I'll make sure that I use the 5 as well. 5, 6, 7, 9 for me in this race.
five would be your top pick. You think Reddington might just be able to bottom them out, or how would you rank?
No. Vespucci's my top pick, but I want to make sure I have the five.
Gotcha. 6, 7, 9, 5 in that one. Let's move on to the grade three gazelle for these three-year-old fillies going a mile and an eighth. As usual, our friends at Black Type Thoroughbreds have a horse that looks poised to potentially make the Kentucky Oaks with a big run. JK, are you going to be a homer in here and choose to talk about that one, or do you want to cast a wider net?
No, I'm going to single Barbatina. And here's the reason. Obviously, I'm rooting like hell for Black Type Thoroughbreds and my friends. But because we've talked about this before, and I'm sure Steve can attest to this, when you know every step of the way, you know more about the horse, you know the behind the scenes, you're a little bit more confident. And here's what I'll say about Barbatina. I know that Jake got me on the phone one time talking to me about this figure for a very long time. And yes. Because he didn't quite understand why in the sixth race at Turfway Park, this race that Barbatina's exiting, they went 137. And then in the ninth race, there was another mile race. They went 138, and the 138 got a faster number. Now, I understand racetracks change. I completely get that. But it's a synthetic racetrack, right? And so it doesn't feel as if like we're in the summer months where it's cool in the morning and hot. I'm not expecting the track to change that much. To me, what it feels like is the number was projected down because they were three-year-olds. And I don't like projected down numbers when I'm trying to understand if a race is fast or not. I think it was fast, much faster than the number that was given. In considering that, if she can handle the move to dirt where she's been training, I think she's going to be tough to beat in here. And I'm going to try to pick up my value in this sequence by singling Barbatina as an A horse. I'll use Where's My Ring and Life Talk, the 1 and the 5 and the 7 Jin Jin as B horses. But I want to try to get a lot of my money going through the 4 Barbatina.
Yeah, I did. I do know that Jake talked to some other figure makers. I don't think he would mind my sharing this. Paul Matisse and Sean Borman among them, who decided not to split that day at Turfway and therefore had that number, I think, something on the order of 10 points higher, which would certainly make Barbatina a more interesting item in this spot. Steve, a speed figure aficionado, I doubt you're making figures at Turfway these days, but what do you think of the case for Barbatina that JK makes, especially vis-a-vis the lens of the idea that figure might be a little bit light?
Yeah, I mean, I have trouble, you know, saying that race is, you know, an 86 rather than a 76 because, you know, where did the winner Maxi Superfly come up with a performance like that? So I'm skeptical it's that much better. You know, having said that, this filly has done absolutely nothing wrong, still has plenty of ceiling, you know, has handled just about everything thrown at her. And she's one of three that I, you know, plan to use in here along with the two favorites. I think Where's My Ring is fascinating, you know, in that she's a maiden, but she's also the fastest horse in the race, as she's been running against much better than this gazelle field in California. I think she's very solid. If I had to lean, I would lean a little toward her, also using Barbatina and Life Talk.
I was going to try to take a stand against Life Talk, and maybe I'm being... maybe I'm being stubborn here, but I just was so put off by the last run. And we've seen very recently Todd Pletcher horses that run very well as two-year-olds shirk off poor comeback races and appear to run back to form. And obviously, if Life Talk does that, going to be very, very dangerous. But I was more interested to try to focus around on Where's My Ring and Barbatina and Jin Jin and stand against Life Talk, because I don't think the crowd is going to give enough credence to how poor that last race was. Does that make sense? I mean, I'm guessing what they're going to do, and that's dangerous in the pick six, because if she really was going to be the 3-1 of the morning line, I would call her an obvious use. But I was thinking there was a world in which they were going to go overboard for her. Am I making it more complicated than it is, Steve, or do you see where I'm coming from with that idea of trying to beat Life Talk at this spot?
Well, you know, Life Talk's race was just so terrible that I just draw a line through it. I mean, I don't think it's that, now we know that Life Talk is really a 57 kind of a filly. She just didn't show up at 2-5. But, I mean, if she runs her Demoiselle, she's a grade 2 winner against a very weak field.
Yeah, right. You make a good point about when a maiden has the best figure, you know, in terms of the commercial figures, especially, that you probably should maybe give a little bit of extra credit to that one. I'll see how the tickets shake out. I may relent from that stance, but that's how I originally wrote it down. Race number 9 is the Bayshore Listed Stakes Action, going 7 furlongs. And we've got this field of 10 signed up here. Steve, we'll keep it with you.
This race is to my mind, really open. And I think, you know, this is the race in the sequence to me where you really want to go as deeply as possible. There are no standouts. You know, for a Bayshore, this is a very unaccomplished field. You know, and I think this is the race on the card where maybe you can get some goofy things to happen. I'm going to fool around with Eliminate for Todd Pletcher. Coming off a 26-length defeat in the Gotham last time, obviously the horse didn't like the slop and didn't, you know, run an inch. But I think this is a horse, third time off the break, who's going to be overlooked because of that, you know, horrible running line last time in the Gotham, who I've always thought had some talent. And in a thin race, if I can get that 8-1, I'm going to use a lot of Eliminate. You know, as well as the obvious contenders like Proprietary Trade. And one horse who I kept coming back to, who I think is going to be a giant price, is Yo-Yo Candy. You know, this horse is running fast enough as a 2-year-old that with routine improvement to 3, I think still could be okay, is a Sanford winner in a you know, field that's pretty light on stakes success in the past. So at 20-1, I'm going to throw in some Yo-Yo Candy.
I like that case because I do think it's the kind of race where it might just pay to be against the favorites, or if not against, at least a little bit more creative. And just with the kind of trip that Yo-Yo Candy might be able to get, maybe not too dissimilar to the career highlight thus far in the Sanford. Very, very interesting case on a 20-1 shot there from Steve. I'll just chime in because I was with you on Eliminate. You know, I felt like you could ignore the last race in the slop going probably farther than they wanted at a big price. You go back and to the maiden win and think about one turn and the quality of this field and the potential off the pace type trip that this horse is going to get in a race that has enough speed. I thought the horse made a lot of sense at 8-1, and I think you have a really good chance to get all of that with so many other horses in here that are going to have to take money. I respected Proprietary Trade as well. Might have been benefited, certainly was benefited from the pace scenario the other day, and the way the race the way the track was playing was certainly felt like it was kind of speed on that day, but finished up really well and, you know, ran a raw number that would just be very, very dangerous against this group. I had an 8-7, very open to more creative ideas as well. JK, do you have some creative ideas in here? What numbers will be on your tickets in this year's Bayshore?
Well, I got bad news for all three of us. Eliminate is not going to be 8-1.
Okay.
Because I saw the same thing. I feel the same way. I like the horse quite a bit. You know, draw a line through the last race, and you look at his you know, his maiden win around one turn. It puts him in the mix here with these connections. So I'll use him. Proprietary Trade, I think you have to use. I don't necessarily trust that last race in the mud, but probably one you need to use. And then the 4 Maximus Meridius, who is almost singleable for me if I didn't love the idea of Eliminate being, you know, probably 5-1. But I think Maximus Meridius makes a ton of sense, you know, has some speed, you know, showed that speed in the Gotham, didn't completely spit it. And I think the cutback now back to the one turn is going to be, well, I know the Gotham's one turn, but the cutback should be, you know, distance should help quite a bit. So I'll use those three. I have that strong opinion in the Gazelle, so I don't want to get too cute there, but I'll use, 4, 7, and 8.
4, 7, and 8 in that order, JK, or do you want me to make Eliminate the top pick and make that a chorus from us?
4, 8, 7 if we're going in order.
Okay, let's do that. What do you think about that case on the presumptive favorite here, Steve? Are you okay leaving Maximus completely off, or will this be a horse that appears on some backup tickets for you?
I think really more of a kind of C-level backup. I think the Gotham carried you know, him a long way because of the track condition. We're looking at a fast track tomorrow. And, you know, he's certainly not impossible, but others appeal more.
Yeah, that's sort of where I landed as well, though, on JK Say So. I'll make sure to squeeze onto a ticket or two so I don't feel like a complete goofball. Let's move on to the race that gives the day its name. The Wood Memorial's up next, a race that JK and I did a video about over on YouTube. You can check that out as well as videos we did for the Santa Anita Derby and Bluegrass. We encourage people to participate in our comment contest. Put the your idea of the exacta for those races in the comments. Will feature you if you get it right on a future video. Been having a lot of fun going back and forth with the audience in the comments too, just asking questions, etc. So feel free to get involved and make sure that you subscribe to our YouTube channel In the Money Media and click that notification bell as well. We saw this race in a very similar way, Steve. So we're going to bring you in as the potentially dissenting voice or maybe making it a chorus again. Who is your idea of the winner, Steve and Chris, of this year's Wood Memorial?
I think it's very likely that one of the two favorites will win this race, those being Deterministic and Tuscan Sky. To my eye, they have both run races that are just a level above, you know, anything that anyone else in this field has done in the past. I like them both. I think, you know, we haven't seen the best of them. We're talking about horses who've only made two career starts. But boy, if they've been good for both of them in both cases. I'd love to see one or both of them, you know, take yet another step forward. I think they're both capable of being very important three-year-olds this year.
Not too concerned about the Tuscan Sky, you know, just the two opponents and the conditions last time. It was impressive enough against the clock that you're comfortable playing him similarly to Deterministic. I was going to try to split them, taking a little bit of a cynical view of that last effort, just because while it was a good time trial, it wasn't much of a race.
Well, you can say it wasn't much of a race because it was only three horses, but Nash did the horse that he beat and ran down in a kind of match race situation, you know, came out of the race to win a stake. So, yep. You know, what does it matter if there were five more bums behind the two of them?
Fair enough. I thought Deterministic, I'll let JK make the case, but this was where I was going to take my stand. From a game theory point of view, certainly smarter long term to be able to take your stand with a horse that's 6-1 as opposed to me with this horse that's going to be 6-5. But I just I felt like he was bound to move forward and was the one that I wanted. I respect Tuscan Sky, but was going to try to be a little bit cute and try to pick up some equity by only going with one of the two obvious runners. JK, give us your thoughts on this year's Wood Memorial.
Yeah, I mean, Tuscan Sky is interesting. You know, he exited that three horse race where Nash came back and ran a little bit slower, but still came back and ran well. So you trust the race a little bit more. But, you know, we've talked about this for years, Pete. I think there's no better play in racing when you're playing multi-race bets and there is a leg where everyone in the world is going to use two horses and you can take a stand and use one. I think you can pick up a ton of equity that way. And it might not feel all warm and fuzzy when you lay your head on your pillow and think about the possibilities of what could happen. But I love Deterministic in this spot because, and we talked about in that YouTube video, on March 2nd, the morning of March 2nd and the day before that, we kept saying, I think we even actually did the show together, all of us, and the biggest issue was, is Deterministic going to be ready off that break? The break. Is he going to need one? Is this a start? Is he rushing? Is he fit? Is this where they wanted to run? Do they need more time? Blah, 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 blah. And he won. And he beat a good horse in just a touch. And now I think we're going to see even a better performance. I think he's going to take a step forward. And if he takes a step forward, these other horses are running for second. I'm going to be ice cold to the Deterministic. No backups at all. I'm going to play this situation through him and try to pick up some equity in some of the other legs.
I had a goofy one to mention for vertical purposes. I know you guys both more horizontal players than vertical, but I thought Gettysburg Address had a chance to maybe fill out one of the lower rungs here, getting back onto the dirt, keying off that Smarty Jones race back on January 1. I thought a comparable effort to that could put him in the frame. Form of that race has worked out okay. It was only beaten three there. It's a guess, but I mean, the horse is 30-1 on the morning line in a race where I could absolutely see a runner like Deterministic and or Tuscan Sky sort of horrifying a bunch of the theoretically faster than Gettysburg Address horses. And meanwhile, Gettysburg Address is able to pass some tired horses and get into the number and run third or fourth at a big price and make this a trifecta worth playing, even with the two favorites in it. Do either of you, and I'll start with you, Steve, have a horse at a bigger price to mention, either as a deep backup in horizontals or as one to maybe dink up and intrigue, make the prices a little bit juicier for the vertical wagers?
Yes, I do. I have a 30-to-1 shot of my own. That's a number 5 Protective from Todd Pletcher. It could be asking way too much of him to actually, you know, have a chance of winning the race. But this is a horse who, like the two favorites, only making his third career start. But he ran a bang-up debut at Saratoga last year. A fast, fast closing second to Valentine Candy, who I think has come back and won 3 or 4 stakes this winter at Oaklawn. And he came back at Tampa off an 8-month layoff and did not run particularly well. But with blinkers on today, he ran like a horse who might benefit from blinkers last time. He could take a big step forward at a big price.
I can see it if I squint on that one for sure, based on that talent, based on that debut, based on the hands he's in. We've seen this movie before from Todd Pletcher, and I think it was in the wood even a few years ago with the big prices, 1-2. I love that idea, and that's another one I'll be feathering in to my verticals and maybe even find a way to get a penny on top in some saver horizontal action as well. We are nearly out of time, gentlemen, but we've got just a minute left. We'll very quickly go through this nightcap race number 11, these 3-year-old fillies, New York Breds, going 6 on the dirt. Steve, we'll start with you. What numbers will be on your tickets to close this thing out?
I think primarily the 1, 3, and 9 in here. You know, Peony is cutting back to 6 furlongs, which is going to be a very good thing for her. She had her race 1 last time at the 8th pole and got nailed late by a firster. I think she makes a lot of sense. Granadilla is a Dutro filly who took a ton of money in her debut, ran very well until getting tired. Now she's had a few months off. And Better Be Smart is the kind of logical closer from the outside. I'm not a huge fan of the 2, Ariana Rye, coming out of a race that I think may have been too highly rated. So 1, 3, 9s for me.
Yeah, very similar numbers here for me, just in a little bit of a different order. Was going to try to get cute with the 3 as a potential best speed, but also definitely want the 1 on side for the obvious merits. And I also like the idea of Better Be Smart getting involved as an intriguing second time starter who looked to maybe be figuring things out late in the piece last time. JK, how about you? Can we end in agreement, or will you bring in some dissension for us to close things out?
No. I'm going to single A the 1 and use the 2 and the 3 as B horses. The 1, you know, I thought the debut at Aqueduct going 6 was a nice race, nice figure. And I think if they run that race back, should be able to handle these 2, but I know with young horses, you kind of wonder, well, you trust that number. If you look at the 7-furlong race and you look at pace figures, if you look at kind of where the race was at the 6-furlong point, that race was about as fast as the first race, if not faster. And so in that situation, I feel like this horse has run 2 races that can beat what we've seen. The 2, Ariana Rye, adding Lasix, breaking a little bit cleaner, could improve and could be right there. And the 3, Grandilla, another one who ran well enough as a 2-year-old and got an okay number that should improve as well, hopefully breaking a little bit cleaner. But I'm going to put most of my eggs in the 1 basket, but I will have some 2, 3 backups.
Guys, really appreciate you. We got to get out of here, but we'll thank you one more time, Steve, and one more time, JK, our sponsors over at NYRA as well. Great day of racing for the Wood Memorial and a lot more to come from us with NYRA. You can also check out JK and the crew over at America's Day at the Races for a full TV schedule. Go to inthemoneypodcast.com/TV. That'll redirect right to the page on the NYRA site that tells you when the America's Day at the Races show is going to be on it and which network you can find it. Very, very helpful tool, inthemoneypodcast.com/TV. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. I'm Peter Thomas Fornatel. May you win all your photos.